Waiter! Waiter! More!
Chicken lay. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. How are you doing this holiday weekend? Thank you for tuning in. Before we get to our guest, just wanted to say a couple of things. Tomorrow is Memorial Day. And in our society at large, there is some confusion about what's happening on Memorial Day. How is it different from Labor Day and Veterans Day and all that? So just very quickly, Memorial Day is a time set aside to honor people who have lost their lives defending the United States in wars. So that's what it is. Mostly it's a time people barbecue and celebrate the start of summer, but for some people, it's a rather somber day as well. Today, I had TV on and listened to a man. It's very interesting. He lost an eye in, guess it was Afghanistan, and he was talking about the difficulties from his point of view, but then he talked about how families don't get talked about very much, and that for a lot of families, it can be even harder, not knowing, you know, maybe you hear that your husband or your father has been hurt, or you don't hear from them for a while. And that's an element that doesn't get talked about a whole lot. And it's very personal to me. My father was killed in what is often called the Forgotten War, the Korean War. I didn't know him. He died when I was an infant. And I think about him on Memorial Day. Tomorrow I will post one of the only photographs I have of him on my Facebook page, and I'll spend some time thinking about him. But I was really gratified to hear that man speak of families, because if you grow up without a father or without a mother, and there are some kids now who have lost both parents in wars, but that creates a hole in your life and maybe even a hole within you yourself that can never be filled. It's a definitive loss, and it's certainly a definitive loss in my life. So no matter what you're doing tomorrow, drinking a lot of beer, drinking some sparkling wine, drinking some really good cider, take a minute and just think about the people who have, for a whole variety of reasons, ended up giving their lives for this country. Certainly something I will be doing. Also want to mention, I hope you're getting to the farmer's market. We have the first of the summer crops. Cherries have been out for a couple of weeks. The first apricots are out. Seems early when a lot of other things are late. We have zucchini already, basil, tomatoes are coming from winters. Soon the patch will be back at the Sebastopol Farmers Market, and they always have early tomatoes, and they're absolutely delicious. It'll be a little bit later for heirloom tomatoes, but hopefully cherry tomatoes will be coming along soon as well. So there's we've already had the opening of the Healdsburg Farmers Market, and as all of the markets get underway, we have 27 markets a week for you to choose from. So there's no excuse not to go to a farmers market. If you don't have the habit yet, once you develop it, you will find shopping for your food so much more pleasant, and things will taste better too. So visit your local farmers market. And now my guest, Will Drayton from A Sawhorse Cider, which is made from apples in Sebastopol. Welcome to Mouthful.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
I'm so pleased you were able to come. This is just great. And I was feeling sorry for you. Oh, he's driving all the way over from Napa Valley, but you live in Sebastopol.
It's only 10 minutes up the road.
Yes, exactly. When did you start Sawhorse Cider?
Well, we've been, I think it was the first thing I did when I arrived in the United States about 2005. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have the Sawhorse Cider Company at that point, but I arrived not knowing anything about Northern California in Humboldt County, and doing a wine internship up there for a little tiny winery. And every time I went home, I would look at all the apples and pears that were just dropping on the ground.
And where was home?
Home was up in Humboldt. Near,
oh, in Humboldt.
Yeah,
okay.
Near Garberville at that point.
I say home from work.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And rather than let the deer eat them all, I thought, why not make some cider out of it? And that was pretty much our first vintage. Made it ever since, every single year.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing apples and pears?
Yeah, the blend that we have right now is a blend of apples and pears. There's probably about 40 different varieties. We have orchards all over Sonoma County, Napa County, mm-hmm. and some near the Delta. And about half of them we pick ourselves. So we do it the hard way. Picking all the apples, crushing all the apples, milling them, mm-hmm. And fermenting in sort of trying to keep them as separate as possible. Mm-hmm. You'd think that I'd have some cider exposure from growing up in the UK in the first place, but I only ever made it here in the US. So mm-hmm. everything we pick and we ferment separately in stainless steel barrels, so we can kind of learn a little bit more about which orchards work out, which apples work out, which pear varieties are best, mm-hmm. And how to make it a little bit better every year.
Great. So you've already poured some. So I think before we talk anymore, I think we should taste through what you've poured.
Sounds great.
So tell me what you have here.
So this is our Sawhorse blend. It's a main cider that we make. We're trying to make it super clean. So it's all done in stainless steel. We pick the apples. We're very, very careful about how sweet they get. It's 100% dry. And we ferment it to try and get as much of that fruit in as possible. My background's in the wine industry, mm-hmm. And in horticulture. So what I do is try and translate as much of that mm-hmm. fruit flavor from the grapes into the wine as possible. And that's exactly what we're trying to do mm-hmm. here with the cider.
It's got a really magnificent aroma.
Yeah, there's a really,
really pretty,
really good kind of fruit nose, and the apples, and there's a good bit of pear that comes through there as well from the stuff we have in there, and we even have a few other bits and pieces in there as well, some medlars and other kind of unusual pom fruit that are kind of related to
medlar.
That. Yeah, medlar is a medieval fruit in France and England that is kind of looks like halfway across between an apple and a rose, and.
An apple?
And a rose.
And a rose.
They're in the same family. And so they have these little things that look like a cross between a rose hip mm. and an apple.
Okay.
And they're very tannic. And normally you can make them into some sort of kind of spread by letting them what's called blat. So they sort of, you pick them and you let them go half rotten. And that's when they kind of lose their tannins and get sweet. Mm-hmm. And you can make them into food that way. We just throw them in the crusher and add them a little bit of tannin, a little bit of backbone to mm-hmm. To the cider.
Where do you get them? Are you growing them?
Yeah, you cannot buy commercial medlars. Anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
So we have a few plants in Oakville, just next to Napa River, mm-hmm. and we pick those bushes, and we'll be planting some in our home ranch in Sebastopol this year as well.
Very interesting. This is, it's definitely dry. Bone dry, which is my preference. This is really outstanding.
Thank you.
This is really, really good.
Yeah. Well, we're super proud of it. And we've been chipping away, trying to improve it every year we make mm-hmm. it. And unless you ferment everything separately and kind of do it yourself, it's really hard to kind of understand that connection between the trees you get the fruit from and the cider that you end up making.
Sure.
And I think we were kind of originally, or I was originally inspired as a farmer's market in England, in the village I had. I remember as a kid walking up there, and there was an apple farmer there, and he produced just kind of sweet apple juice. Mm-hmm. And he had every single different variety of apple juice all lined up in a row on the table. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize you could make all these different flavors of apples from these different trees. It turns out it's a little harder than that. When you actually turn it into cider, the flavors kind of come together a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so we really try and pick out as distinctive of different apple types as possible to try and broaden out the blend. And if you have a cider with just one, then generally speaking, it's a little one-dimensional, not so interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a Chardonnay where you just make it with Chardonnay grapes and it tastes great and it tastes very different than a Sauvignon Blanc or what mm-hmm. have you. The apple variety is a little bit more kind of similar to each other, less distinct.
Right.
So it really helps to blend and add in one component 1 year and then kick it out the next year when you realize it didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So this year's failed experiment was Rome Beauties. And we got a beautiful looking couple of bins of Rome Beauty apples and crushed them. They started smelling great at the beginning. And then by the time they ended, it was just kind of absolutely neutral, boring cider. So they won't be making the blend next year. Uh-huh. And we'll try and find something else that goes in instead.
What are the varietals? Varieties that you have found that are most successful for what you want?
Well, we love the Gravenstein. Obviously, there's a kind of a hometown hero there. And I have some very old Gravensteins in our orchard back at home. We also found a wonderful, just off Hagen Road, a wonderful orchard in just north of the town of Napa there, which is just all Gravensteins. Mm-hmm. And so we picked those. They're good. They provide some really good acidity, but they definitely need to be blended with something to kind of flesh them out a bit. Mm-hmm. We really like Newtown Pippins. Newtown Pippin is a variety that was supposedly Jeffersonian, and so it's been around for a long time. That's one of the great things about cider. It's really an American drink as mm-hmm. much as it is a French drink or an English drink. A lot of the cider varieties from those countries don't do so well over here. They uh-huh. have different pests and disease, different climatic conditions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the whole tale of Johnny Appleseed.
Right. He wasn't spreading apple seeds for eating. He was spreading them for cider.
Right. There was like evolution on steroids, you know, picking out all the varieties that really work for the local ciders and, mm-hmm. and cutting some then. So there's this great kind of wealth of American varieties that are just really fun to pick from. And then you get the old country ones as well, and you know, it's a lot of fun to play with all of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about pears? The pear cider I know is from Ace Cider. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a very popular, but it's very, very sweet. And I think it's made from pear concentrate.
Yeah, I don't know how they make it.
Yeah, I think they make everything from concentrate.
Well, so one of our great growers is over in the Delta in pear country. And although we don't buy pears from them, we actually grow all the Bartlett's that we have in here ourselves on the home mm-hmm. ranch. Pears can make a wonderful dry cider, mm-hmm. just really great. And the really old-fashioned one would be with peri pears, which I need to get on, but I think they take 50 to 100 years before they really reach maturity, so I might have missed my boat there. but yeah, these peri pears grow 100, 150 feet higher. They're just enormous old trees, and they make a wonderful kind of complex, but they have a lot of tannin in them mm-hmm. and a lot of other things that kind of wouldn't be like a dessert pear. You wouldn't want to eat a peri pear by itself. It would the tannins would kind of rip your teeth out sort mm-hmm. of thing. But we try and do it with Bartlett pears, which are obviously dessert pears, but fermenting it really cold and in stainless with some really clean yeast that doesn't impart a lot of flavor means that pear flavor really comes through to mm-hmm. the end product, which is what we're after.
Mm-hmm. And that goes into your blends, right? You don't do a separate pear cider.
More's a pity. We didn't have enough Bartlett's this year. So okay. We had a barrel, which we were going to keep separate, but you need a certain minimum quantity before it's worth kind of bottling up separately sure. and everything. So it's made it in the blend this year. I'd mm-hmm. really like to do a Bartlett one next year. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of really great pear cider producers in California that people have got to try.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pears grown up in Lake County as well. And I live in an orchard with a lot of pears, especially Asian pears. Lots and lots of Asian pears. Do those work in cider at all?
We haven't tried them by themselves. We haven't had enough quantity to do that. Mm-hmm. We pick some in there every year and kind of go in with the pears in general. They can be a bit neutral, so we're mm-hmm. not sure what they'll be like by themselves, uh-huh. but we've not had enough to do them by themselves.
Uh-huh. We're going to take a quick musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back with more talk about cider. The Expelled with Cider. Thanks so much to my fabulous engineer, Anthony Garcia, for finding that song. Love it. You sell most of your cider in Napa, is that right?
Most of it, yeah. We've got a couple of places over in Sonoma and always looking for new places.
You got to get it into some places in Sebastopol.
I agree.
You got to get it into maybe Mother's Ruin.
Okay.
And K&L Bistro.
Totally K&L, absolutely.
And Fern Bar.
Yes, I got to have a chat with them.
Bear.
We were actually with those guys at the Sonoma Slow Food Festival when they were getting their award this year, and we were mm-hmm. pouring the cider there and had a lot of really positive comments and, mm-hmm. and folks invited along to the Gravenstein Appreciation Group as well. So,
mm-hmm. you're going to be at the Gravenstein Fair this year?
Absolutely, yeah.
What will you be pouring cider in the cider tent?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. There's a couple of things. So the Gravenstein Fair this year is, I think, the 17th to the 25th of August.
And no, the Gravenstein Fair is just two days.
Oh, sorry, it's just 2 days, yeah. There's what I meant to say was there's Sonoma Cider Week coming up, which kicks off
Cider
with
Week.
That.
Yes.
And so we're going to be there at Cider Week this year with all the other fantastic local producers, and we all do something very different, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. So there's a real range of things you can taste from Sonoma County there. And so there's going to be some cider events all the way through the week, and we'll be participating in some of those, and, you know, basically getting the word out about cider.
Excellent. And we'll be talking about that on Mouthwell as we have since it started, I think. We do at least two shows about cider a year. We love cider on Mouthwell. And we love the Gravenstein Apple Fair, of course. I live just down the road from it. I'm hoping that this year it's not as hot as it was last year.
It was pretty toasty last year.
Last year I did something in the DIY tent. I actually had people making three or four different things in the DIY tent, and then I could barely crawl to my car afterwards. It was so incredibly hot. It was like 103 or something that day.
Well, we were picking that day. So every year we've done it so far, it's been picking apples and pears all morning. It kind of corresponds with the Gravenstein's being ready,
right?
Obviously.
Yeah.
And then the Bartlett pears are ready almost exactly the same time, mm-hmm. especially if you want to pick them a bit hard, which you need to do if you're going to crush them for cider. Uh-huh. If they're too soft and kind of, if they're ready to eat, for dessert type pear eating, then they just turn to complete pear sauce when you squash them.
And that makes sense.
That becomes a crushing nightmare.
What's the process by which you crush the fruit for cider?
Yeah, it's really easy, actually. You know, easy enough that we even used to use an old garbage disposal unit and just put them through there.
This is
back when we were making, you know, 5 gallons, 10 gallons at a time. But it's basically a mill. So it's a kind of spinning blades, and they chop them up into what looks like coleslaw. And then you put that in a press and squash it, and juice comes flowing
there
out.
There you go.
It's really easy. It's probably the easiest thing you can make. It's all about the decisions and how you make it rather than the actual process. It's just a piece of cake.
And what about yeast? How do you make a decision about what yeast you're going to use? Well, and do you ever ferment wild?
Just the yeast
that's on the fruit?
We do. This one we're tasting right now, this Sawhorse, is done with a specific yeast we chose. We actually did a bunch of yeast trials at the beginning, you know, getting everything from wild yeasts in there to beer yeasts and ale yeasts, specific cider yeasts. There's a series of yeasts that you can get which don't produce sulfur, H2S. That's the rotten egg smell, you know, because some yeasts can really kind of get stinky when they get going. And so we tried all of these out in carboys. We had sort of 5 gallon batches of them and tasted them all and figured out which ones we like the best. And that's the ones we stick with today.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a bit of a science to the whole thing. All the guys I make it with, we're all connected to UC Davis in some way or shape or form.
You went to school there, right?
I went to school in Davis, yeah. So I did horticulture and agronomy there, but also took all the winemaking classes at the same time. I was part of the viticulture and enology program.
Mm-hmm.
So a great place to learn, and also really cool to just apply those skills directly from the wine industry to the to cider making.
Now, is cider making full-time for you, or do you still work in the wine industry?
I work in the wine industry full-time. So this makes for very busy weekends and evenings.
Okay. What do you do in the wine industry?
I work for Treasury Wine Estates, and I do...
Treasury?
Treasury, yeah. Okay. So we own several wineries across Napa and Sonoma and the Central Coast.
Oh, which ones?
Behringer.
Oh, Behringer.
Sterling.
Okay, Behringer, Sterling. Okay.
Several
familiar
of them.
Ones.
Yeah, yeah.
In the last decade or so, I think they've changed hands.
That's right, yeah.
So, I think some were owned by Constellation.
No, Constellation was his own thing. We used to be owned by Foster's.
Okay, that's what it, okay, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And so now we're a standalone with a, it's a great place to work, you know, mm-hmm. a bunch of really amazing vineyards. And I grew up in the vineyard side of things. So mm-hmm. little vineyards all the way from Lake County all the way down to Santa Barbara County.
Okay, and what is it, what's your position?
I am the director of technical viticulture and
the director of
technical viticulture.
Oh, technical, okay.
And research winemaking.
Okay.
And sensory science. So it is all the really geeky side of mm-hmm. making alcohol.
I think that's the fun side.
You're totally right.
Yes, absolutely. So you're a hobby ciderist.
Well, this
to
is
some degree.
This is supposed to be paying for itself. That was definitely uh-huh. the rule, and we've been doubling every year since we mm-hmm. started, which has been really great.
About how many cases are you, or how whatever the measurement is?
Yeah, we have about this year. We have about 25 barrels, I guess. Okay. So that's plenty more than I could take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So we need some help drinking it, and we distribute across kind of the North Bay in kegs.
So oh, you distribute in kegs?
Yeah, we don't have anything in bottle yet, so it's all okay. on tap across places. So you just got to keep an eye out for when it's coming on tap.
Okay.
I think the latest keg we dropped off was over at the Rincon Valley Tap Room, and so mm-hmm. that we're on rotation there right now. And then there's a couple of places in Napa that, or multiple places in Napa that we've kind of been there for a long time since day one.
Mm-hmm. Which places?
So La Taberna is a great tapas restaurant right mm-hmm. down near the riverfront there. By the way, Sawhorse cider goes fantastically well with crispy pig ears. If you want that as a combination, just
well,
delicious.
That is really good to know.
Just in case you're in a tight spot. And then Jack's Diner, Norman Rose Tavern, mm-hmm. and then all up in Calistoga at Johnny's Bar. There's also some other kind of rotating taps across mm-hmm. across Napa and things. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was living until we moved out here and bought an orchard.
Uh-huh. And is that your base of your full-time job is in Napa?
It's sort of all over California.
Okay, but so you have to drive around a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's the curse of having vineyards all over the place.
Yes. Do you envision going to bottling at some point?
Yeah, we're working on that for this year. Uh-huh. And this, what we have in front of me here, this is a quince cider, which is not quite finished
quince?
Yet. Quince cider, yeah.
Really?
So we got, it was sort of a lucky accident, but we planted a few quince trees and crushed them and had maybe 5-10 gallons of it.
What kind of quince?
These are Smyrna and Van Diemen quince.
Okay.
And we had no idea what they're going to be like. I mean, mm-hmm. if you ever pick a quince, right, it's rock solid. You bite into it. It's the most tannic thing. It's like yes. You won't make that mistake twice.
I have 5 quince trees.
Ah,
and I'm going to have an enormous crop this year if nothing happens. I was out looking. There are so many baby quince on my trees. It's 2 years ago, I had 2 quince. Just 2. I don't know what happened. And then last year, I had quite a few. I was able to give a lot away. And then I made, I made probably 70 or 80 jars of Membrio.
Oh, delicious.
Quince paste.
Delicious.
But I'm going to have even more. If you need
well,
quince,
if they're looking for a home, we're always looking for quince. There's okay. just not there's not a commercial supply of quince, is
there? Well, there's another tree about 50 to 100 yards from my house. It's in just a slightly different microclimate. So when I had 0 or when I had 2 quince, they had a full tree. We'll stay in touch. You are welcome to come pick quince. They tend to ripen usually second, third week in September.
Well,
huge.
They're such cool fruit, and they're so unusual looking. And we have a fantastic orchard that we get some quince from in mm-hmm. Petaluma. Mm-hmm. And those guys donate the fruit, and absolutely wonderful, wonderful people. But I even got a little desperate last year and put a word out on Nextdoor to say, hey, anyone got quince going in their backyard?
And
I got multiple takers.
I missed it, or I would have called you. but you're welcome to my quince, and you're welcome also... you can break off canes after the season. You can break off canes and plant some.
Well, I've just got a little quince growing experiment going on at home, so I just planted about 40 quince trees.
Oh, wow. You have a lot.
That's plenty. I've got some ambitions with this quince cider.
I had one quince tree, and then I just separated it and have four more, but I noticed there's so many canes. So I'm going to open that up at the end of harvest this year and say, anybody wants to quince trees? And I only planted them because gophers don't eat them.
Gophers eat everything, in my experience, unfortunately. So,
Have they bothered your quince trees?
Not yet. Well, these quince trees only went in this year. But
they don't eat quince trees.
Oh, okay.
So you should be okay. They don't eat quince trees. They don't eat wisteria. And there's a number of other things that they don't eat. I've lived on my property for 31 years, so I'm pretty conversant with what they don't eat.
Well, I've got a little caddyshack on the gopher population at our place this year after they felled like three 6-year-old apple trees.
Oh, yeah.
And that really gets you. So there's no love lost between me and the gophers at the moment.
No, it's the gophers. I know that all creatures have their purpose. Actually, there is a purpose for gophers. I was very surprised. I think they probably were just not native to this area, somehow got here. But when Mount St. Helens blew, it's gophers that allow the area of a volcanic eruption, ash eruption. It's gophers. They dig the tunnels, and that allows seeds that, you know, the birds drop to grow. So they aerate the area that has been, you know, covered in volcanic ash.
That's so interesting.
So I saw a special about Mount St. Helens. It's probably 2 years ago. It was talking about how it's coming back and what has allowed it to come back. It's like, there, a reason for gophers' existence. I'm glad to know it.
That's exactly what happened after the dinosaurs and the asteroid impact. The little mammals that were there were mostly burrowing ones, and most of the fossils they found are in tunnels underground. So that's maybe even bigger than a volcanic eruption.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note, take a deep breath, listen to some music, and we'll be right back.
The prettiest girl I ever saw was sipping cider through a straw. The prettiest girl I ever saw was sipping cider through a straw. I said to her, what you doing that for? A sipping cider through a straw. I said to her, sipping cider through a straw. She says this line to me, it tastes so fine to me, better than wine to me, just sip along. So cheek to cheek, and jaw to jaw, we both sip cider through a straw. So cheek to cheek, and jaw to jaw, we both sip cider through a straw. And suddenly, the straw did slip, and we were sipping lip to lip. And suddenly, the straw did slip, and we were sipping. The parson came to our back door, a sipping cider through a straw. The parson came to our back door, a sipping cider through a straw. Then bells began to ring, the choir began to sing. Now lots of little things, they all call me Paul. If you don't want no mother-in-law, then don't sip cider through a straw. If you don't want no mother-in-law, then don't sip cider through a straw.
Sipping cider through a straw. Guess who that was? You know the name. This name will be familiar, or at least his big hit will be familiar. It was Chubby Checker, famous for the twist. I don't know if it was his manager. I don't know who it was who named him, but surely it was in response to Fats Domino. You know, Chubby Checker. I think he got kind of screwed on the name thing. But Sippin' Cider Through a Straw. Thank you, Anthony. I had no idea he did that song. I want to talk a little bit. When did you come to the United States? When did you move here?
I got here in 2005.
Oh, that's when you came.
Yeah, okay, that's when I came. Yeah, so straight off the plane, straight up to Humboldt County. Uh-huh. Was not quite what I was expecting. I figured California was all beaches and, you know,
oh, Humboldt's very
surfing.
Different.
It was awesome. Absolutely loved
it. It's wonderful up there. Just wonderful.
We stayed with my parents-in-law-to-be, didn't know at that point, and they had 10 acres up there, and the drive every day was sort of 20 minutes down out the mountains and off to this little winery there where I got to do absolutely everything from work on the forklift and fix the batteries on it, to make the compost, to prune the vines, to to do the chemistry in the lab with titration of the acidity and everything.
Was it the profession or was it romance that brought you here?
At that point, it was definitely the romance.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what had you been doing in the UK at that point?
Well, I had graduated with a degree in experimental psychology.
Oh.
And as you can imagine, there aren't many careers in experimental psychology just knocking around.
No.
I had been teaching rats how to recognize different complex images on a touchscreen.
Really?
And if they got it right, they got a sugar treat.
Oh, how interesting.
But that didn't translate into a career, unfortunately.
No. Yeah.
And so in the same time I was at uni, I would work in a wine shop and sell wine. And I thought, well, this can't be that hard. Although I don't really want to sell it. I'd much rather be making it. That mm-hmm. sounds like more fun.
What part of England were you living in?
The southwest. Okay. So I went to school down in Dorset and then lived in the home counties in Hampshire. So okay. just outside of London.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful part to grow up in. Lots of apple trees, lots of cider being made. And I didn't get a look in on it until I came over here, ironically.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about when you grew up, especially the pleasures of the table. Was that an important part of life growing up?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my mom has always been a fantastic cook.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, that's what gets you hooked always, right? Once you start having
yes.
really good food, it's hard to go away again.
Absolutely.
But I was born in Hong Kong. And
oh.
So I'd always had a love of Chinese food as well and, mm-hmm. and a lot of the sort of fusion flavors and things.
How long did you live there?
I left when I was four. So I have memories, but I guess some of those food memories kind of stick around.
Sure.
And then got back to London after that. And I remember I was in the Cub Scouts, and so it was really important for us to get as many badges as possible. And the one that I was really practicing for was the Cub Scout cooking badge. And so it was like, okay, mom's drilling me, right? How to make rice, you know, equal parts water and rice. I think this was a Chinese recipe she picked up while living in Hong Kong. And then bring it to the boil and then stir it once, put the lid on. Do not take the lid off. Whatever you do, turn it down to a bare simmer, and then 20 minutes later, you're done. And it works out perfectly every time. So the Cub Scout badge was cooking an Indian curry for the rest of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And we had all the different, you know, cubs all lined up around the room. And my meal won the prize, which was great.
Nice.
And so I was like, wow, I can do this. So I've had fun cooking and things since.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I moved to California, though, my wife absolutely eclipses me. So I take a bit of a backseat now and concentrate on the cider instead.
Was she originally from California?
She's from Mill Valley, yeah. So she grew up over here, and they've always had a garden and grown vegetables. And in Napa, we had a fantastic garden.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how easy it was. I used to enter vegetable growing competitions in the UK, a little kind of village fair, and I got the prize for the best carrot and the best cucumber, I think, one year. But it was always a struggle. We had to have things in a greenhouse, and you know, it mm-hmm. rains a lot and it's kind of cool, and mm-hmm. so certain things grow really well. But coming over to California, it was like falling off a log. It was just too easy.
Yes.
And as Napa especially, we just some of the local compost and some raised beds, and pretty much we were growing three or four times what we could eat in no time at all.
Yeah, and I think Napa doesn't have the same problem with gophers that West County, do they?
No, not really.
That they don't,
the
no.
soil's heavier, and so yeah, that makes a big difference. The sandy soil over here in yeah. the Goldridge series and various things like that, it's hard work, and they just mm-hmm. love to tunnel through it.
Yeah, and before you got here, I'm pretty sure, so you probably don't know about this. I think it was in maybe the late 1990s. Someone found a journal in an attic in Santa Rosa, and it was by Russians, a Russian. And one of the things it said was, "We think we could have made it here if it weren't for the ground rats." And they were eating all the potatoes and beets and everything that they planted up in the Fort Ross area. They couldn't grow enough food because of the gophers. But I remember I grew up in the East Bay. I grew up in Vallejo. And both my mother and my younger daughter were born in Napa, and my relatives in Napa. And I didn't know anything about gophers until I came here and watched them suck down plants right at their most perfect moment. They would all be gone.
We used to live in Davis when I was going to school there, out in the fields. And so cycle in and out to school every day. And we learned the hard way there. You know, we had the most beautiful onions and things grow in Davis, like, you know, weeds. And so great big onion. And then we were standing there kind of looking at the garden, and then suddenly this thing started kind of like wiggling, shaking
yes,
down, and then boop, disappeared.
Yep.
Underground.
Yep.
So, yeah, we got a little bit more serious about our gophers at that point.
Yeah. Now, you have another cider for us to taste. Is this the quince cider?
This is the quince cider.
Oh,
so this
I just can't wait.
This is not quite released yet. We're working on a bottle for it because we have limited quantities. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we get it around to as many people as possible rather than selling it as a whole keg. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it's also still. So we carbonate our ciders. Oh. Our ciders are all fizzy, and I think that really helps. It kind of throws a lot of the aroma out of the glass because mm-hmm. a lot of it's about the aroma of the cider mm-hmm. rather than just the acidity and the mouthfeel. So this will be even better once it's fizzy. I mean, the quince...
So you carbonate it later in the process.
That's right. So we do it still in barrels and mm-hmm. let it ferment to dry. And then when we're ready to go, we put it into a tank and we add CO2, and it just sits there under pressure for a while and sort of absorbs the CO2. And that makes it as fizzy as we want to. So we have kind of a light fizz to it. Mm-hmm. And you'll see in a second. But when it's still, it's a little bit less aromatic. But mm-hmm. But you really get to kind of concentrate on the aroma rather than the mouthfeel of the bubbles and everything.
It's really interesting, and I mean that in a good way. I like the initial taste, the very first taste is very tart.
Mm-hmm.
But then that tartness fades quickly. It's not like lemon tart, where the lemon will stay very acidic on your palate. As you swallow it, and then the reverberation or the finish, I don't think I would identify it as quince, but I identify it as something very... for lack of a better word, it's very pretty.
Yeah, I mean...
It's very pretty.
We had no idea what we were doing when we first put the quince in a bottle. We mm-hmm. We crushed it, we pressed it, which, by the way, is a complete nightmare. It has so much pectin in it that it sets up like cement. So
Absolutely.
The first time we emptied our press, it was like tip the whole thing upside down and shake it. We almost had to take a pickaxe to it to get it out of there. Yeah.
That's why it makes membrio.
Exactly. But we poured it into a keg and let it settle out. And then when we racked it for the first time, was the first time we really got to look at it, not cloudy anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was this bright, bright green color.
Really?
And
bright green.
Smelt like kind of this floral limeade kind of thing. It was really unusual. And so we were like, right, we're going to make that again. And ever since then, we've been trying to get back to that same first kind of mm-hmm. falling in love with it. Because if you pick it too late, it gets a bit kind of flabby. And if you pick it too early, it's really acidic. And so trying to find the right time to pick and the right varieties of quince. We now have about eight different quince varieties at home planted.
Oh, really?
So we'll be doing some little experiments and grafting of those onto the ones that are successful.
I have to say, I don't know that much about different quince varieties. I know Chinese quince and European quince. That's
well, so
it.
there's a local thing. Luther Burbank mm-hmm. invented one of their quince varieties. The Van Diemen quince is one of his. So we definitely want to do something with a bit of Santa Rosa local stuff. But there's everything from pineapple to...
pineapple quince, I know, of course.
Yeah. Aramat Naya, some kind of Russian ones, a bunch of Turkish quince, mm-hmm. and Smyrna as well. So mm-hmm. Really you know, a big range of quints that can go into this.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. I think this is lovely. And when it's carbonated, when it's effervescent, it's going to be so exuberant. But it's really quite lovely.
We wanted to try and avoid just adding new flavors to things. We wanted to kind of work with apples and quince and pears that we already have to try and get things as distinct as possible. And it's not always that easy. Mm-hmm. So,
and plus using natural flavors rather than adding flavors.
Yeah, we don't want to add fruit puree or you know, we could make a strawberry apple flavor by adding strawberries.
Please don't.
But, you know, I think this is, you know, it takes a bit more experimentation, but it's what we wanted to do. We really want to try to showcase the fruit as much as possible.
There's a purity of flavors when you do it that way. And I find that really appealing.
Well, we also wanted to showcase the orchards as much as possible because a lot of this is the fact that it comes from local orchards all across Sonoma and Napa. And so we have them on Howell Mountain and down in Kenwood. And then obviously a couple of orchards, three orchards in Sebastopol. Mm-hmm. And then multiple other ones in Napa. We have one in Oakville and one just north of Napa. Mm-hmm. We've got fruit from anywhere. And so if the orchard works out and produces tasty fruit, we'll go back there year after year.
There you go. Do you ever think about what different foods and food preparations cider resonates well with?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little biased, so I think it goes well with pretty much everything.
Everything, sure.
But we make sure there's a lot, really good amount of acidity in there. So we make sure it doesn't go through what's called malolactic fermentation. Mm-hmm. So turning that malic acid.
Because that will make it flabby.
It will. It'll lower the acidity levels. And it's not like in wine where it can be really acidic, but you've got both tartaric acid and malic acid. Mm-hmm. It's just mostly malic acid in an apple. So if you lose that acidity, you're in trouble.
Now, if it were to go through... That's the wrong way to phrase it. Left to its own devices, would it naturally go through malolactic fermentation? And do you have to intervene to make that not happen?
Probably it will. I mean, there's not necessarily lactic bacteria around that are going to be in there. So you could be lucky and you could be fine. It won't go through that. Mm-hmm. But they're everywhere. They're floating around everywhere. So... Mm-hmm. Now, we do add a little bit of sulfur dioxide in there, just like you would in winemaking. And what that does is it discourages their growth. And then we're just really careful to clean everything super carefully so it doesn't take off. Because we don't filter, we don't fine, we don't treat in any way. So to keep it like this, we've got to be, you know, super, super careful.
So it's just keeping that particular bacteria out of it.
Exactly.
Is what will do it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've always wondered. I'm not fond of wines that have gone, for the most part, that have gone through malolactic. I think it makes them flabby. Mostly it makes them flat. I like good acidity, and I think acidity is really the bridge that forms excellent connections with food.
Absolutely agree. And so with that acidity, I mean, obviously the classic pairing is pork and anything fatty like that. The acidity really helps cut through that, through the fat there, but also seafood is pretty good, you know, a cider in place of, like, say, a champagne or something like that, they have similar acidity levels, that's similarly kind of bubbly, and is, you know, they're both produced locally, so
absolutely
couldn't be a better Sonoma County pairing.
I make a chicken dish that this would be really good with, and it's not mine. It's from Normandy, and it's chicken. You saute the chicken in butter. You saute a bunch of apples that you've sliced in butter as well. You deglaze the pan with cider. You cook until the chicken's done, and then you finish it off with cream. I think it's just called Normandy chicken, and then you eat it with a nice glass of dry, cold cider, and it's fabulous.
Delicious.
I've done that at the Gravity and Apple Fair a couple of times. Back when they had the chef's tent. They've gotten rid of the chef's tent. But now I serve food in the VIP tent, so I'm still involved. We're going to take one more musical break here on Mouthful. We'll be right back for our final segment with Will Drayton of Sawhorse Cider.
Cider, sweet as apple cider, sweeter than all I know. Come on love will whisper, will whisper soft and low. And it seems as though I can't live without you. Listen, oh my honeydew. You know I idolize you, because I love you, Ida, baby, deed I do. As though I can't live without you. Listen, oh my honeydew. I love, you know I idolize you, because I love you, Ida, baby. Ida, baby, Ida, baby, deed I do.
Yep, that was Bing Crosby, a first on Mouthful. Thank you, Anthony. We've got our final few minutes. Now that we've whet everyone's appetite, nowhere in Sebastopol quite yet.
We've been on at the community market before.
Oh,
and
you have?
All the last year we're in Hot Monk. And so there's a bunch of local fans of Sawhorse. So
Hot Monk and community market.
Yes.
Okay, great. So people can always go in there and request it. And you have to talk to Matt. Do you know Matt at Mother's Ruin?
No, I don't.
Matt is from the UK as well. And he opened, gosh, we had him on a while ago, just after he opened. So he opened, I think, just a little bit after the Gravenstein Apple Fair last year. And the specialty of the bar, and where the name is, which inspired the name, is gin, from Mother's Ruin gin, back when the English got really mad at the French and everyone was making gin. It's a nice little bar. Right across, almost directly across from K&L Bistro. So you should definitely go in and talk to Matt, because I know, gosh, the last time I was in there, which was a few months ago, he had a cider on tap, but I didn't recognize it. But I bet he would love, you know, he supports local people.
Fantastic.
So you should definitely go there.
Well, it sounds like we need a cider and gin cocktail to be derived.
There you go.
That could be awesome.
There you go. And, of course, there's Spirit Works, which makes the gin and a variety of other things.
Yeah, those guys do some really tasty stuff.
They do, and they're also making the spirits for the Coppola label, Great Women Spirits.
Mm, yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, so they're doing that. And Coppola now is making one or two dry ciders, and I haven't tried those yet.
I haven't got to try them yet either. Obviously, the big competition, I gotta study up on these guys and see what they're doing.
Yeah, I have to go up. I have to see if they're serving them at the restaurant at Virginia. Do you know Virginia Dare Winery?
Yes.
Yeah. I think they might be serving the ciders there. I have to go look. The restaurant now is only open, or is open, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, where I will Comico, Native American restaurant, and their ciders would just work perfectly there. And I was reading up on everything to do with Coppola a few months ago, and I think they're selling the ciders there.
Mm.
With your work in wine and wineries, technical viticulture, Is most of your work before, does it most of your work come before harvest?
You know, we, it's absolutely crazy having a cider business.
I was going to say, how do the two things, that's where I was going.
No, I mean, the busy time of year is harvest for everyone. And so we start picking apples around the beginning of August. And we finish picking them around the end of November. And that's a slightly longer window than we pick grapes for. But right. We pick grapes almost exactly the same time.
Yeah.
And just as we get really busy with one, we get really busy with the other. So,
Two kids.
One.
So you don't sleep much during from August to November.
There's not a lot of time left in the day. No, but it's easy when you love doing it. So
Sure, of course.
And you know, if I've trained Charlie, who's the eldest one, so we go down the fir crest and look down the aisle of wines and beers, and he just points to everything, calls them all ciders. So I feel like my job is done here.
There you go. So Charlie and Henry.
Very English names.
Yes. 4 and 1. How sweet. What's your wife's name?
Ellen. Yeah. And so a little family living in an orchard just outside Hardcore Coffee in Sebastopol.
So right there near the corner. Oh, I drive past you getting here. I drive past you every time I leave, just about every time I leave Sebastopol.
We're very lucky. Sebastopol is a lovely town, a really nice place to have moved to. And Napa wasn't bad at all, but there's no way we could get an orchard in Napa for the prices that things are these
days. Plus, the thing about Napa, and I have been connected my entire life, Napa is hotter. You are not welcome to the fog bank. And that's the thing that I've always found difficult about Napa is, especially as you head up valley, you know, Napa is that one long valley with the side valley. And then Pope Valley and a couple of others, but it's got the one long valley. And the further north you go, the hotter it gets. And that's pretty brutal. I was surprised when you said there was an orchard of Gravensteins in Napa that you get. I was surprised because Gravensteins love the fog.
They seem to do really well. It's surprising. I think it's a lot about the time at which bloom happens. You know, it's nice and dry and they set really well. There's plenty of bees around there. It's nice to have both of these are really rural places, so lots of good bees and pollinators and things to help things set in the first place. But apples are like grapes. You know, they taste different when you grow them in different areas. So
absolutely.
It doesn't mean that they're not going to grow. It just means that, you know, you got to pick and choose.
Okay. Yeah. I just, you know, there's a lot of talk about Gravensteins really loving the fog. And the fact that we have gourmet mushrooms there as well. And one of the things that the founder, Malcolm Clark, talked about when he was looking for a place to grow his mushrooms was that the mushrooms he wanted to grow really preferred the same climate as the Gravenstein apple, which is why he chose Sebastopol. So this is actually the first orchard in Northern California that I've heard about that isn't in Western Sonoma County.
Oh,
so that's very interesting.
They do like the cooler weather. And there's some varieties that we just cannot grow. Even in Sebastopol, there's not enough chilling hours. And I think that's something we need to be paying attention to.
Yeah, and that's things are changing, of course.
Right. So I'm keeping an eye out on some of the Spanish varieties that would be used to growing in hotter climates. And some of those are being imported now. There's also some wonderful old apples that people are beginning to take cuttings from the Sierra foothills that do well with sort of warmer weather and have been left by themselves from old farmsteads and things that have been abandoned, and the old apple trees are still just hanging on by their fingernails.
Interesting. Well, what a blessing you are to apples and pears and quince. You know, that's fabulous.
We're equal opportunity as far as all those fruits are concerned.
And if people want to get a hold of you, would you sell a keg to an individual?
Yeah, we self-distribute as well.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And so absolutely reach out on our website, sawhorseciders.com.
Okay, and there's a link there to reach you?
Absolutely.
So sawhorseciders, exactly as it's spelled, .com.
That's right.
Okay, well, Will Drayton, Drayton. The Drayton family.
That's
Ellen, Charlie, Henry, and Will. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You have a great rest of your weekend. You have an extra day off this week. I will not be here next Sunday. My grandson, Lucas, who you have heard from since he was about a year old, occasionally on Mouthful, he is turning 18. He is graduating from high school, and we are having a week of celebration. So I will not be here on Saturday, but I know that Anthony will find a fabulous archive. And I will be back on June 9th, and we will be hearing from two guests from Food for Thought. They have a very special event coming up, fundraiser, on August 11th, and we'll be hearing about all of the details. It's, I think it's called the Long Table Event. It's a sit-down dinner with an hour-long reception beforehand, and I think it's a pretty good menu, but then I can say that because I designed it. So meet me back here 2 weeks from tonight on Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming on KRCB Radio 91. Have a great week.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling